Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Man, Dave Kelsey is all over the place. Everybody's getting their picture with Dave Kelsey. I was checking X yesterday, Twitter, some used to call it, and I saw a tweet by Senator Tim Sheehy. There's Dave Kelsey. He's on the board for Yellowstone Valley Electric Cooperative. And then earlier this morning, I got a chance to catch up with Montana's U.S. Senator Steve Daines right before they went into their Montana coffee at, I think, 8:20 D.C. time, 6:20 Montana time. And Senator Daines shares some photos from the Montana coffee. There's Dave Kelsey again. He's all over there. Everybody wants their picture with Dave Kelsey. Well, speaking of Montana Coffee and Montana Senator Steve Daines, I got a chance to catch up with him earlier this morning, and here we go. Senator, great to have you as always.
Hey, good morning, Aaron. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, how would you recap President Trump's first 100 days? And hey, it's been a bit of a sprint for the U.S. Senators in the first 100 days as well.
It has been. You know, we're batting 1,000 here in the Senate for President Trump. Every single one of his nominations has moved through, and that's so important to get his great team in place. But I'll tell you, back here in Washington, it's like every hour is a new day. The velocity of which President Trump is moving, it's the liberal minds are exploding as they watch what he's doing every hour. In 100 days, he's delivering win after win. I'll tell you what's not being talked about enough, Aaron, is what's happening down that southern border. Border crossings all-time low under President Trump's watch. And remember that famous line, we needed a change in policies, we needed a new president. That's exactly what happened. He delivered that result. Unleashing American energy, gas prices are now down. We're seeing more production. He saved Colstrip. Let's talk about that for a moment. The Biden administration was dead set on shuttering Colstrip. And thanks to President Trump's leadership, Lee Zeldin, our EPA administrator, executive orders reversing some of these terrible regulations would have shut down Colstrip. And by the way, take a look what happened to Europe when Spain and Portugal went dark this week because they put all their chips on the renewable energy bet and it failed. They nearly sent all of Europe dark this week. It was an act of God, a miracle that all of Europe wasn't dark because of this this blackout. And that goes back to putting all of their emphasis on renewable source of energy only instead of reliable baseload power like coal and nuclear. And then let's not forget how Trump has really kicked Joe Biden's woke policies to the curb. It is so nice to get back to the reality and the truth. There are two genders, Aaron, and it's nice talking to our military leaders. It is such a relief for military leaders not to have to be always looking over their shoulders with these crazy woke policies. How about women in sports? Nice to see that we're keeping the men out. It's just this nonsense from the left. So it's just refreshing to see President Trump's leadership and, importantly, the results.
All right, more to follow right after the break. Then we'll get to your phone calls and more with phone lines open for you here on Montana Talks.
Montana Talks, uniting the Treasure State, one conversation at a time. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
Yeah, speaking of the southern border, we had a great conversation with Allie Bradley talking about the northern border. She is a News Nation TV correspondent who is in Whitefish. Senator Steve Daines, I think Governor Gianforte told us that he's heard that there's roughly 1,000 illegal aliens that they estimate are in Montana, mostly in the Gallatin Valley. Talk about what you've been seeing and hearing, because obviously it's a brand new day. ICE now, the Border Patrol, now finally able to do their jobs instead of being diverted to process illegals into this country. They're getting illegals out of this country.
Look, this is one of these issues is right literally in our backyards in Montana. remember just this past February, ICE agents went in and arrested and deported six members of the Trendu Aragua gang. That's that violent gang from Venezuela. This is a gang that was created back in 2014 in the prisons in Venezuela. These are hardened criminals. This is organized crime. This is drug trafficking, human trafficking. These are the worst of the worst right there in Bozeman, and we had some in Kalispell as well. It's interesting. When I chatted with our Gallatin County law enforcement, these amazing men and women on the front lines protecting us, they told me that under Joe Biden's watch, ICE would not come up and do these busts and these deportations. They knew about these hardened criminals here illegally, and ICE, the ICE teams down in Denver, the Biden team basically said, you know, you don't go in there and go after these guys. It's awful. And then as soon as President Trump was elected, guess what happened? ICE starts to roll. They're starting to roll these guys up, get them out of here, and make our community safer. So this is yet one more example of a direct cause and effect of this past election. And by the way, you know, I just got to give a shout out to my new battle buddy here in Washington, Tim Sheehy. It is so refreshing. When we go down and vote in the Senate floor, Tim and I are voting the same way, supporting every one of Trump's nominations, every one of Trump's policies. And you remember when John Chesterman was back here, we canceled each other's votes out most of the time. And that's not a personal attack. It's just a fact. You look at our voting records. And I tell you, it's such a breath of fresh air to have Tim Sheehy here. He's been a wonderful addition to the U.S. Senate. And we're flying in tight formation here with an American First agenda and supporting President Trump.
By the way, I saw a great video. Senator Sheehy did the pond skim at Big Sky Ski Resort. He skied in the pond skim along with one of his boys, and I shared that video on X, and somebody said, you know, a lot of those U.S. senators would have broken a hip if they tried to do that. A testament to
I think it would have been worth probably a fatality for most of the senators who he did there, Karen. For sure.
Yeah, anyway, that was pretty funny. But the economy, you know, we got a great young man filling in as our producer this week, Finley Warden. You know, Chris and Lori in Missoula, great family. So Finley's right. Filling in. But anyway, I asked him, I said, hey, what should we ask Senator Steve Daines? He said, what about a foreign policy question? India, Pakistan. And I just saw Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent says there's about to be some very good news with an India trade deal, which could be big for Montana.
It is. Well, look, this is what's happening is President Trump's disrupting the global order in going after generational kind of trade barriers, these tariff and non-tariff barriers. But India is an example. I mean, of course, you got 1.4 billion people. There are more people now in India than in China. Because China put in place that one-child policy, so their population is actually declining. India's keeps growing. That's a lot of mouths to feed. And if you're a Montana producer of pulse crops, that is a great market for us to get better access to. So they're on the cusp of announcing new trade deals with India. I got to give you a quick story, too, about Vietnam. I made a trip through Hanoi here back in March. I met with their top leader. He's called Do Lam is their top leader in Vietnam. He says, Senator, we want to buy 200 Boeing airplanes. We want to buy three C-130Js. We want to buy $5 billion American LNG. We want to buy U.S. beef, U.S. wheat, U.S. barley. And we want to take our tariffs to zero for American products. Now, that's a tremendous deal for America. That's yet another one of these deals that's in the works right now as we speak because of President Trump's leadership. And so this is how we use these bold tariff moves that Trump has used as a means to the end. And the end would be lower tariffs, lower non-tariff barriers, and allowing better access for American producers to get in these markets. We can never forget that 95% of the world's population lives outside the United States. You think about the future of Montana agriculture will be in getting access to these international markets.
About 1 minute to go here with Montana's U.S. Senator Steve Daines. I just shared on X yesterday a great letter by you and the entire four-man Republican congressional delegation from Montana backing the Stillwater mine and telling President Trump about the importance of that mine. Why was that letter so significant right now?
The only producer in the United States of platinum and palladium Blue Water mine right there in our great state. It was Joe Biden's anti-energy policies that led to the layoff of nearly 700 employees at that mine. It was disastrous. I introduced a bill that would ban the import of these critical minerals from Russia. Russia is flooding the market below market prices and is putting these miners out of work. So I led this letter yesterday with Senator Sheehy, with Congressman Downing, with Congressman Zinke, explaining the importance of this mine, highlighting to President Trump why it's absolutely crucial that the mine continues operating. This is one of these, you know, critical minerals we need for America, and we cannot be dependent here on Russians who are right now trying to destroy our mining industry. And by the way, when we're buying Russian palladium platinum, we're funding the Russian efforts in Ukraine. So there's a lot of reasons why we got to shut this down.
Senator Daines, appreciate your time. Great to have you on the show as always. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Darren. Yep, good for having me. Bye-bye.
New details emerge in the frantic search for a missing Montana woman. We've got that story at MontanaTalks.com. Plus, a near-fatal grizzly bear attack inspires a new Montana product line. The governor celebrates the largest tax cut in the history of Montana. And Vegas, baby, Butte, Montana's touchdown Tommy Mellott headed to the Las Vegas Raiders, while Billings' own Junior Bergen is going to the San Francisco 49ers. Full story, MontanaTalks.com.
I'm a pretty great multitasker. I can wash dishes and do laundry.
I can roller skate while walking my dog.
I can even order lunch while doing my homework. But I can't use my phone while driving. A distracted driver is one of the leading causes of death in the United States. So when it comes to driving, please, don't be a multitasker.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Wow, I just, during the break there, I checked X, just to check the Montana politics hashtag, see what's going on in the Montana legislature, because earlier this morning I heard Jeff Laszloffy's legislative update on the radio. He does a legislative update for the Montana Family Foundation every day during the legislative session. And during his update today, at the very end of it, I heard over the radio, he said that today could be the day when they wrap up the legislative session. Today could be the day where they signee die. Now, I know some of you are thinking, what? What? They're going to get out of there without getting their jobs done, without getting the work done? I mean, okay, income tax relief, great. That's a huge accomplishment. The governor just signed that into law on Monday. But what about judicial reform? Property tax relief? Well, it looks like they're debating property tax relief bills right now. But look, everybody is not going to be happy with that. But either way, it was interesting. You know, some might be saying, look, they need to stay and get the job done. They've still got to deliver on judicial reform and so much more. But then other folks, and I think Jeff Laszloffy kind of hinted at that. He said, look, it will be good news if they decide to call this legislative session a wrap, especially because of, you know, so much of the train wreck where you've got a handful of Republicans voting with Democrats, and especially when it comes to this massive government spending. I think I saw a percentage that the Freedom Caucus was talking about, 18% spending increase if the governor signed this nonsense into law. So it's like, wow, so we get halfway property tax relief for some people in agriculture. They might get a property tax hike. Thankfully, we'll get some income tax relief, but yet massive spending that's getting across the finish line with a handful of Republicans teaming up with Democrats. Like I said earlier in the week, like we've said before, I hope the governor is ready to break out the veto pen. And like Senate President Matt Regeer out of Kalispell said last week, on our Thursday legislative update, I hope that veto pen has a lot of ink in it. But yeah, I just checked here. So Jeff Laszloffy said that today could be the day where they wrap up. And Jonathan M. Berrien, who is the Montana Television Network reporter in the Capitol, he said this 14 minutes ago. Here we are, day 85 of the Montana legislative session. And everyone is expecting this to be the day the legislature adjourns sine die. The House is set to debate a property tax bill and hold final votes on bills, including the Maine state budget. And then they expect it to be a wrap there. When it comes to property tax relief, I saw a report by the Lee newspapers that State Senator Greg Hertz out of Polson is not happy with the hybrid property tax relief bill that appears to be what's going to finally get across the finish line here. I did notice that that the Chamber of Commerce and the Montana Chamber and some ag groups also don't appear to be happy with the property tax relief hybrid bill that is in the works right now, because they say, yeah, it'll give good property tax relief to residential homeowners and some small businesses, but ag could see an increase. And if people have a family cabin or things like that, they could see an increase. So Greg Hertz basically told, I think, the Lee newspapers, or was quoted by them from the floor, saying that they'd be better off waiting to get it right than moving forward with what's in front of them right now. He thinks they need to save property tax relief for a special session, because he doesn't think they're going to get it right with this one. But anyway, that's part of what we're seeing coming out of the state capitol in Helena. Here's what else I find very interesting. Very interesting is, okay, the governor and the veto pen. I reached out to a friend working in the capitol who knows a bit about how the process works. And my question to that contact was, so how does this work? Okay, so the governor can do amendatory vetoes. The governor can straight up veto some of this stuff. He can line item veto, which is nice, because you might get one massive budget bill, and maybe he can go through that and just start break out the red ink and just put red ink through a whole host of different items there. And so apparently, amendatory vetoes require the legislature to take the bill back up and change the language in it. That is only possible during the legislative session. So any amendatory vetoes have to be taken care of during the session. So hopefully, if there were amendatory vetoes, they will act on those before they adjourn, before they wrap up. The other interesting thing is the governor can line item veto any appropriation in any bill. So that's spending, right? Most of that is in House Bill 2, which is the big budget bill, but could also happen to other appropriations bills. So the governor could go in and line item veto specific provisions, which is good, especially if he's got a whole pile of fat sitting on his desk in front of him here. You know, think about having a tiny piece of meat just surrounded by fat. I think that's what the governor's going to have in front of him when it comes to this spending measure. So, I mean, it's going to be worse than pork belly sitting in front of him. And so he's gonna have to trim off a whole bunch of fat, breaking out the line item veto here. Now, the other thing that's interesting is, okay, what if they adjourn later today and there's a veto or a potential veto next week, the week after that, however long the governor has to either sign something or allow it to become law or veto it, et cetera, the Secretary of State would issue a veto override poll that would be sent out to lawmakers all across Montana. SOS veto override polls apparently only get sent out if 2/3 of the legislature had supported the bill. If the bill did not get that much support during the session, then the veto stands. That process applies to both all-out vetoes and line-item vetoes. So, for example, at the moment, the legislature would not have the ability to override line-item vetoes of House Bill 2 post-session, because House Bill 2 has not gotten 2/3 support to date. Now, that could change if it goes to a conference committee or whatever shakes out here. Anyway, that to me, unless, I guess I'd have to check and see on the status on House Bill 2 and see what got finalized. But that to me sounds like good news, because what you'd hate to see happen is the governor line item vetoes all this massive pork barrel spending that's going on. And then you know, all the lobbying behind the scenes, everybody wants to get their hand in the cookie jar. They start lobbying these lawmakers to override the veto. And then you get a handful of Republicans that team up with the Democrats to do that very thing. But if the massive spending bill didn't get the two-thirds support that it needed to get across the finish line, then that tells me that they can't then vote to have an override on a line item vetoes of that spending. So that would be some good news there if the governor does what we hope he does, which is break out the veto pen in a big way. All right, so I thought that was some interesting stuff. Hey, we do have the phone lines open for you. If you got something you want to talk about or you want to jump in on the conversation here, what do you think? Should the legislature call it a wrap today? Has it been just enough of a mess that get out of there, adjourn, sine die, stop the bleeding? You know, if you got, the longer they sit there, the more of our money they want to spend. So call it a day, adjourn, sine die, get out of there. Is that what they should do? Or are you saying, hey, no, they need to stay there until they get it right with property tax relief. They need to stay there until they get it right with judicial reform and a host of other topics. What would your guidance be? 406-294-0970, or you can message us on the Montana Talks app as well. Let's see. I just got a note from our guest producer this week. From Finley, he says, Finley Warden, he says, apparently they just formally announced that the legislature will be done later today. House and the Senate sent out that they are having closing press conferences this afternoon. Yes. Oh, yeah, here we go. Let's see. I just got a press release or a little heads up here from Kyle Schmock. He is the chief of staff and the communications director for the Senate Republicans in the Montana legislature. He sent this note to the Capitol Press Corps. He says, Senate Republican leadership will be having a press conference in room 303 about 15 minutes after sine die to close out the session. So, yeah, it sounds like they are planning on having having an adjournment here later today. 406-294-0970 is the number for you. And then coming up after the break, I want to talk more about President Trump's first 100 days. I caught up with Alex Pfeiffer, Deputy White House Communications Director, talking some Montana-specific stuff and more. I'll share the highlights coming up after the break. Let's go to Joe in Helena on the phone lines. Joe, what's on your mind?
Hey, Aaron, Joe Doolin here. How are you, sir?
Hey, good. What's going on? Good to hear from you.
Well, I just called to say there's very little difference between what Greg's doing and what Bullock did and Schweitzer did. This budget that's going to be passed is with the nine Republicans or the Democrats. This is what Greg wanted. And it just, you know, yesterday, God bless him, Senator Heinbaugh called in and kind of gently tried to nudge you that way. But this is all what Greg wants. He isn't going to line item any of it.
So you think
that's my read on it.
So you think that even though, I got a call from Brad, you know, former Representative Brad Cheetah in Missoula. And I mean, he was very critical of the governor. And, you know, his argument was, yeah, the governor wants this. He's been working with these nine all along. So your theory is you think even though this budget, the current spending goes far above and beyond what the governor proposed in his budget, your theory is that he actually wants this, and he will sign this massive spending increase into law.
Well, the Democrats aren't dumb, so if they're going to play ball with Greg, they need to get something in return for it. So that extra spending is what Greg didn't want to, but it was the sausage in the sausage he had to make, you know?
All right, hold that thought. We got to hit the hard break here, but Joe Doolin, yeah, stand by. I'll come back to you if you can stick around.
This is where Montana talks at with Lane Nordlund.
Everyone, Lane Nordlund reporting from Down Under. That's right. I'm excited to share that I am covering the 2025 World Angus Forum from Australia. My coverage brought to you by RotoMix, delivering feed performance you can depend on. The World Angus Forum, held every 4 years, brings Angus breeders and industry leaders together from around the globe to share ideas, research, and genetics that drive the beef industry forward. Before the forum kicks off in Brisbane, we'll be traveling across Australia Australia on the Zoetis Angus Track Tour. We're starting here in Sydney and working our way north along the coast. We're going to be visiting premier Angus ranches, research centers, and feedlots. We'll see firsthand how Angus cattle are raised down under and how their genetics continue to shape beef production worldwide and how U.S. Angus genetics influence producers here in Australia. Now, throughout this trip, I'll be sharing daily updates on radio, but also on all of my social media channels. I'll bring you the insights, the stories, and the innovations that make Angus cattle a global powerhouse connecting Montana ranchers to the world stage. And yes, we're traveling with a handful of Montana ranchers who all share their story as well. Again, follow along here on this radio dial or on our social media channels. And again, thank you to RotoMix for sponsoring our coverage. You should check them out at rotomix.com. I'm Lane Northblatt.
Serving the great state of Montana, from the peaks of the Beartooths to the banks of the Clark Fork River, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right. Well, thankfully, Joe Dooling was able to stick around on the phone lines from Helena. By the way, we got the phone lines open for you as well, 406-294-0970. Or you can message us on the Montana Talks app. Joe, I checked in with you during the break, and you said, hey, I'm on my tractor, so hopefully you can hear me okay. And then I told you, I said, well, I just hope you have a good cigar going while you're there in the tractor. And you do. So is it a cattle Baron, or are you doing something different today?
Oh, it's a cattle baron, buddy.
Nice.
There's only things worth money. But what I was going to say is,
well, you got to try the Tatankas, too. You got the Tatankas. I tell you what, man, those are really good ones as well. And, you know,
I'm a part owner of the cattle baron, so I got to support.
I didn't know that. Well, that's cool.
If you look at what happened on Ag Day, St. Paddy's Day, up in Fort Benton, the governor had a big press conference, and he had Senator Kissmer there, but he didn't have Russ Miner or anybody else. So, I mean, what those nine are doing, it's being directed by the governor, and it's just, for the life of me, I don't know why the governor's not getting attacked as well as the nine. And I 100% agree with you that, you know, the budget comes from the legislature. The governor can give his suggestions, but it should have been through the Republican leadership and all that we voted for. That's what should be the budget, not this, you know, hybrid. And of course, the spending's up because the Democrats say, yeah, we'll play ball, but we're going to want a little bit more as well. And Greg had no choice. And to be honest with you, you know, Medicaid expansion played a big part of that. And that's why we are where we are. And
well, I think, you know, some in the Montana Freedom Caucus have been very critical of the governor, and they've said what you've just said, where they think that he is the one steering and orchestrating the nine. You know, he endorsed, you know, some of the more moderate members in the primaries, but he also endorsed some of the more conservative members in the primaries going back over a year ago. It'll be interesting to see what he does with the actual spending bills. Does he sign them? Does he veto them? Does he line item veto it? Because, yeah, you've got, you know, on one hand, you've got some of the more Freedom Caucus-oriented folks who are saying, oh, the governor's been with the nine since day one, and so he supports all this stuff, kind of like what you've suggested. And then on the other hand, it's like, I think the governor, you know, the governor has met weekly with legislative leaderships, but, you know, most governors, you're kind of danged if you do, danged if you don't. If you get too involved in the legislature, they complain. Why are you down here telling us what to do? If things aren't going their way, they complain that the governor's not being involved enough. And so, but I think legislative leadership, clearly they wanted to go a certain direction that in some ways mirrored the direction the governor wanted to go, but in other ways was different from where the governor wanted to go. And so, I the governor's got to play with the cards that he's got there on that front. Let me throw one more thing at you, Joe, and then I want to get your reaction to all of it, because I'm interested in your take. State Senator Jeremy Treibas is one of those who's been very critical of the governor. And when I made the point that I think that if the governor doesn't veto this massive spending, I think it threatens his whole legacy as governor.
18% is the number I heard that this spending increase, if this gets across the finish line, would be. Jeremy Tribus, he thinks, Senator Tribus, his theory is that he thinks that that the governor is going to veto this spending and just to come out and look like the hero. And so, well, it's like, but I think the governor is going to do what he believes is the right thing to do regardless, whether it vetoes some of the spending of the nine or not. But I hope anyway.
If he did that, he'll never, this next session, if he needs to make a deal with the Democrats, he'll never be able to get it done. So I would be shocked if he would turn the back on that. But the bigger point.
But he shouldn't need the Democrats. He's only going to need the Democrats if the Republicans, you know, decide to keep shooting themselves in the foot by not. But you know, especially if this massive spending gets signed into law, well, you can. The Republicans can kiss a lot of this goodbye. In fact, it could cause problems. Greg Franks in Billings made a great point. This could cause Republicans in the midterm elections if they drop the ball and pass this massive spending increase.
Well. You know, but I guess the final point I want to make here is, you know, you and I have been really involved in politics for the last 20 years. We've been saying, gosh, we just want to own the second floor. Things would be done. That's the governor's office. We can stop this bickering. What's so frustrating to me is how there shouldn't be a public bickering between Republican leadership and Republican governor. This should all be worked out long before they come to the Capitol. And so the fact that this stuff is happening is just like, why did we fight so hard for the second floor when at the end of the day, you could take Greg out of this equation and put in Steve Bullock or Brian Switzer. Same thing happened when they were governor. They worked with a minority of Republicans and the Democrats to get their budget passed.
Yeah, but what happened when Bullock and Switzer? What happened when Bullock and Switzer were the governors? You had a handful of Republicans say, "Well, if we want to get anything done, we need to vote with the Democrats because there's a Democrat governor." Well. It's the opposite now. You don't have to vote with the Democrats to get something across the finish line because you've got a Republican majority. And so if that was their argument 12 years ago, then it must have been a load of BS because now they're still doing what was done 12 years ago by a handful of Republicans. And so, but now we've got hopefully a Republican governor that will veto this this craziness, if you ask me.
Well, I mean, politicians not telling the truth there, this must be a first. You know?
Well, we'll see.
Anyway,
we'll...
That's just my read from the tractor. This stuff isn't happening by accident. And some of those guys have a long life left in politics, and they wouldn't be doing this unless they were being instructed to do it.
Yeah, we'll see what happens at the final end of the day today, of course, and then what happens with vetoes or the spending measures. Because yeah, I'm with Greg Franks on this one, and you and I have shared a cigar with him as well. I'm with him. I think this could really cause problems for Republicans across the board in 2026. It would be. I think I said 2024 next year in the midterm elections and cost them the legislature and more, because if they not only don't deliver on what they told the voters they want to deliver on, but instead they deliver this massive Adam Schiff sandwich of a spending hike, I think folks across Montana are going to be outraged. And it's not just going to be the outrage that before has typically been contained within central committees. It's going to be outrage amongst the broader electorate. All right, let's talk President Trump's Let's talk some good news. Let's talk President Trump's first 100 days. I did that very thing, talking President Trump's first 100 days with Alex Pfeiffer, who is the Deputy Communications Director in the Trump White House. Here you go. Here's part of that conversation. Montana loves President Trump. I know President Trump loves Montana. Man, the first 100 days. The first day. Nobody could keep up with Donald J. Trump. I was there during the inauguration, and I remember walking Pennsylvania Avenue, and I had to keep my app on just to try to stay up with the news, because this guy started sprinting on day one, and he hasn't stopped in the first 100 days at all.
No, we're not taking our sweet time, because the American people and the nation doesn't really have the luxury of waiting. So we move as quickly as we can to deliver results. In the first 100 days, the president actually signed 142 executive orders. So that's more executive orders in 100 days than Biden, Bush, or Obama did in 3 years. And to me, one of the hallmark accomplishments of these first 100 days is the border. So securing the border has been President Trump's, you know, key issue ever since he announced in 2015. And we did it in the first 100 days. You know, border crossings on the northern and southern border are down over 95%. We have the military on the border. We're building miles of wall. Migrant shelters are now having to close down. There's no migrants to fill them. So, you know, we've accomplished that, and now we're moving on to accomplishing other goals. In the next 100 days, a big focus of ours will be delivering tax cuts through Congress and increased funding to ICE so they can ramp up their deportation numbers.
What's it been like for you just working in the White House communications office for these first 100 days alone?
You know, it's been a lot, but I've been, I did the campaign before this, and I was a producer for Tucker before that, so I've been going 100 miles per hour for a few years now, so I guess it's the status quo. So the pace hasn't been crazier than the previous pace of previous jobs. The campaign was pretty intense. But it's been fun. You know, to me, what I enjoy the most is when we fulfill campaign promises. We have a running doc at the White House of, you know, saying what the president said on the campaign trail, and then when he enacted it, and the list keeps growing every day. You know, yesterday we signed an order to have the DOJ put together a list of sanctuary cities that protect illegal immigrants, and then we can find out what federal funding they're getting. And obviously we spoke about putting that on the campaign trail. So, you know, that's what I enjoy the most, fulfilling our promises.
All right, I'll have a couple more highlights, plus we'll get to your phone calls right after this. 294-0970.
Media Minute with Howard Kurtz.
Just in case you hadn't noticed, yesterday was President Trump's 100th day in office. It's getting a lot of attention. He's done all these interviews, particularly with Time Magazine and The Atlantic. Nevertheless, he also talked to reporters before getting on the helicopter, I believe, to head out for a rally in Michigan, a state where he did very well in addition to all the other swing states. Whether you like him or not, he has closed up the border. He has accomplished some other things according to his own ideology. And also, his polls are sinking because of the pain associated with, as he asked for patience, a lot of the tariff war and trade war that he triggered. So the media's job is to cover all of that with balance. With your Media Minute, Howie Kurtz, Fox News.
Win. Don't miss out. Your smile deserves the best.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Hey, yesterday on the show, we were talking with John Jackson, the Joker from X, about the 100 bad hombres in 100 days. I should probably share that soundbite from White House Deputy Communications Director Alex Pfeiffer. Full audio on our Montana Talks podcast. But anyway, we'll get to that, sneak in some more phone calls. But first, I got a message from former State Representative Brad Cheetah out of Missoula. He raises a really important point. The only constitutionally mandated job of the legislature is to pass a balanced budget. As it currently stands, the budget proposed by this legislature has a deficit of $500 million. Now, some claim that the governor will veto certain items to bring the budget into balance. However, the Constitution requires that the legislature pass a balanced budget, not the executive. The legislature has not fulfilled its constitutional duty to the people of the state of Montana. That was the message from former Representative Brad Cheetah. All right, real quick, into the phone lines we go. Frank in Evergreen, what's on your mind?
Hi, Aaron. Yes, the diversity of fuel here in Montana is really a boon. It really is. It's great. It's. I was in Ireland, and I noticed hasn't really changed that much over the last 50 years. It's very verdant, very green. They use coal, they use oil, they use electricity, they use solar, you know, and there's a benefit to coal that I never was ever realized until I went there. It was they have a cleaner way of burning it, and
so they keep using coal. Why shouldn't we? All right, Frank, appreciate the phone call. Let's see, who do we got next up on the phone lines here? We've got Sandra in Gray Falls. Sandra, what's on your mind?
Good morning. Thank morning. You for taking my call. So I just wanted to know who the gentleman was. There were a lot of guest speakers last week, but there was one that you were talking about, talking with about the new property tax laws that are being voted on. And at the end of his conversation, he said that we're all just leasing our land from the government anyway. And he is, like, totally wrong about that. We own our land, and we elect our government.
I mean, in theory, except for, you know, if the property taxes get so high and burdensome that you lose your land, then do you really own your land? Like I get your point. Private property rights are a foundational American right. But it sure seems like these property taxes are trampling on that, doesn't it? Sandra, thanks for the call. Okay, Frank and Evergreen talked about coal. I also talked about not just coal, but making America great again, making mining in America great again. From a Montana standpoint, President Trump's first 100 days, Montana coal, and so much more. Here you go. Here's what Alex Pfeiffer from the White House told me yesterday morning.
So, yes, a couple things on what you just mentioned. When it comes to coal, this didn't get much attention, but it's worth touting. Secretary Burgum and the Department of Interior last week announced new changes to the permitting process. So it used to take many years to get permits necessary to start a mining project. Now it could just take 28 days under the new regulations. So that should increase the amount of coal projects and all sorts of mining projects that we're having. And then as it pertains to the USAID, I think it's important for your listeners to understand how this is working and why it was so messed up. So when we started, you know, putting USAID on the chopping block and highlighting some of the bad grants, you know, things like transgender opera in Colombia, you know, people wondering, you know, what the hell is this? What transgender opera in Colombia? And the defenders of USAID are like, oh, this is appropriated money. And it's actually not how it works. The way it would work is Congress would just basically approve, you know, a bucket of money. So for something as vague as just like public diplomacy. And then these bureaucrats at USAID were like, okay, now we have this bucket of money. We want to spend it on transgender opera in Colombia. And they wouldn't notify Congress that that's what they're spending the bucket of money on. So, you know, they were, you know, misusing funds from the taxpayers and Congress to push left-wing agendas in countries around the world, and certainly those countries don't appreciate it. You know, again, when we also announced sort of cuts to the USAID funding in Africa, lots of people in the U.S. were outraged, or how dare we do that, but leaders in Africa and presidents there and so forth came out and were happy about it. So he clearly wasn't doing good work there.
Yeah, great point. Yeah, because they saw how it wasn't in their interest either. All right, full audio of my conversation. Like I said, we talked about the 100 bad hombres in 100 days and much more. Check out that full audio on the Montana Talks podcast. Legislative update tomorrow.